Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 368, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is James Stacey, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, Jason Heaton. Hey Jason, how are we doing?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, it's a great Tuesday here. We've got a great guest and some great news, and the new cat is settling in just fine here, so we can give an update on that in a little bit here. But before that, we've got some newsy stuff too.
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, some pretty big news. So we're going to gloss over our weekly mention of the fantastic Vancouver and Montreal timepiece shows coming up at the end of April and the end of May. You can get your tickets at timepieceshow.com. I will be at the Vancouver show. I would love to see you there if you're coming. And we've got a great party planned with Roldorf and Marathon. Details to follow on that, so just stay tuned. But the reason we're moving quickly is the CWN1 prototype auction has ended. It ended last night. It was very exciting. And Jason, I will not take any shine from this. Jump right in. What a thread it was.
It really was. What an exciting thread. I thought for sure, you know, after we announced this and had that first week, there was a bit of a lull. And then the bids started coming fast and furiously right up until the bell last night. And yeah, what a tremendous result. So, you know, without further delay, the winning bidder, for those who are on Slack, obviously already know this, but the winning bidder was Dwayne Gardner, Dwayne G on Slack, with a whopping, this makes me so happy to say, $6,000 bid, which he already donated to Second Harvest, which almost brings tears to my eyes how generous this community is. And then we have to also give a shout out to Jan M., who kept the bidding going and encouraged others to donate. And we'll get to that in a little bit here. But his high bid was $5,750, and he went ahead and donated that as well. So right there between those two guys, we've got close to $12,000 for Second Harvest.
Wow.
A really worthy cause. They're going to be just thrilled to get that. And then beyond that, you know, Jan had put out a call to the community saying, hey, you know, let's all jump in here. And even if you're not bidding for the watch, go ahead and donate because it's a worthy cause. And we got 41 at least, because I'm guessing some people donated without, you know, even mentioning it in the Slack thread, but 41 folks that actually mentioned that they had donated as well. And, you know, on behalf of both of us, and, you know, James, I'm sure you'll chime in here. I mean, just thanks to everybody who participated. We're just so thrilled to have TGN as a platform for this, and just amazed at the outpouring of support from our community.
And yeah, an absolutely massive result between the official winning bid and the other donations that came in, including Jan M's massive donation. We did want to take a moment to just offer a shout out to everybody that was in the thread and said that they donated. So we got 41 additional donations, like Jason said. So we've got Dwayne and Jan M, Jackson B, Tom Dugan, Brandon Dean Lowry, J.A. Ruppert, Matt H., Dan Q., Milltime, Jonathan, Steve T, Swimming Remy, Arno, in parentheses, Dave, Bund, Josh Bund, The Wrist Explorer, Anthony C, Ray, Tom Scrivener, Caleb, Jeremy Biramai, Brian, Sean P, Nick Southern Watch, Fur, BC, D Leroy, Matthew Berth, HTDG Bob, Josher, Rado, Dwight, Paul Eastwood, Peter Castle, Christian Badali, Derek 72, Jack Cortado Swiller, Troy, Josh D, Luke Midlow, Ryan Jacobs, Alex H, Ted, and Watch Thinker. So an incredible list. You know, we had a couple hundred people, or better part of 300 people in the channel at large. And yeah, just a huge result. So I just want to say a big thank you, obviously, to Dwayne and to Jan and to Jason for coming up with this idea. I take no credit here, but I'm just blown away by the result. And we had one final thing that Jason will add in as a little thank you to the group.
Yeah, we thought, you know, as a small acknowledgement to the rest of you who donated to the cause and followed along with all your encouragement, we wanted to pull a name from this list of additional donors and maybe put together a little care package of some TGN goodies. And we selected a winner from that list that James just read, and the winner is Josher. So Josher, I will reach out to you and grab an address and those details from you, and I'll put a little package in FedEx for you, and you should see that in a couple of days. So, you know, thanks again to everybody who contributed to this. And, you know, we had other folks that offered up, you know, JR offered a book and a watch, and, you know, some other people offered up things to include in an auction. And we're kind of trying to sort this out because we have a very generous community. And we just wanted to mention, we're not ignoring, we're kind of working with the mods on maybe a model for going forward, for people that want to give to good causes. Cause I think it's such a neat way to use our platform for good. And this was such a great example of that. So thanks to everybody.
For sure. And I had one interesting thing, now that we have that all locked in, a very strange sort of coincidence. These things happen in life, but it blew me away. Moments after we got the final bid from Dwayne, and then the news that Jan had made his donation as well, Sarah got a text from a relative in New Hope, where we meet up, and Jan, for the last several years, has planned and helped coordinate with Triumph Brewing in New Hope, the TGN hangout that we do each Thanksgiving, each American Thanksgiving. As of yesterday, Triumph Brewing closed.
Oh, no.
That location, March 9th, effective March 9th, they closed. So, Jan, I will reach out. We will find another solution. Maybe maybe we can get enough people that we can lock out the entire space for the ship, which is across the street in Lambertville, an incredible sort of old school nautical themed but very tiny bar just across the water from New Hope there. But yeah, I thought that was so strange. One moment you're telling me, you know, the news that we just shared, and then I get this, and I'm like, oh, there goes our hang. I was kind of thinking of the scene we could do one over Easter.
Oh yeah.
But we'll as I'm heading down to PA for Easter, but we'll figure that out, and if it works out, we will. But yeah, sad to see Triumph Brewing go, but certainly we'll get all those buddies together somewhere nearby and have just as good a time.
All right. Well, I shouldn't say that's the end of the excitement, because we have a great guest today, and
incredible guest, and we need a cat update.
A cat update.
We will get Lydia Winters is incredible. The chat was super fun, but we do need a cat update for sure.
Yeah, I think the cat is ours. That was kind of the first big decision. We still haven't settled on a name. We're workshopping a few options, and you chimed mm-hmm. in with some good ones last night when we were going back and forth. And I'm not gonna announce any of the short list of the names, but it's so weird how seriously we're taking this naming process, because as most people know, I mean, cats sort of know their names, but they're not like dogs where it's like really critical that you have a name. So, you know, we can take our time with this a little bit, but the cat has settled in really well. We had her in a separate space for, the first, I don't know, 4 days or so, with some visits from Ruby, my dog, on a leash. And that went really well. Then off the leash in the separate space, but sleeping separately. And then we brought the cat inside, and they've gotten along famously. They play together. I mean, this cat is tiny. It's a kitten. And I think Ruby understands that this is a tiny little creature, who I shouldn't say means no harm, because she likes to kind of swipe at Ruby's nose, but and Ruby kind of bares her teeth and snaps at her kind of playfully, and they kind of chase each other around. But I don't think it's going to be too far along here before they're sleeping together and snuggling up and just being the best of buddies. So it's this was entirely unplanned, a totally serendipitous happening in our lives, you know. But it kind of seemed like, you know, having to rescue a cat from a tree into which Ruby chased this cat just seemed like fate.
Sure.
And we did our due diligence. I mean, we put messages out on social media and neighborhood groups and contacted people, and I hung flyers up, and nobody has responded. We got her scanned for a microchip, but she didn't have that. So I think she's our cat. So
that's fabulous, man.
Once we pick a name, I'll give a further update. So, but it's it's been fun. And, you know, feeding time in the morning is a new adventure. You know, I take Ruby for her early morning walk, and then come back, and they're both ready to eat, and one eats on the counter. You can guess which one, and the other one on the floor. And so, it's all good here.
Just a matter of time until, once that weather's a little warmer, Cat's going to be in a backpack for that walk.
Oh, I did think about that. Yes. All going to be that.
Maybe
guy.
The cat will love bike rides.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting up on the handlebar.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's great, man. I'm super glad to hear it. You've been sending me the occasional picture. And then I caught bits and pieces on Instagram as well. Super fun.
It's great. I can't stop taking pictures. It's like you at the zoo.
Yeah, for sure.
They're just endlessly fascinating.
Animals are fun. Yeah, it's a good time.
They're great. Yeah. Yeah. All right, what have you been up to?
Yeah, I got back from NYC late last week, pretty much laid low for the weekend, kind of zeroed out on energy. And then just kind of attacking the week here. Have some travel coming up next week, a very short trip to see some watches in Switzerland. So I'll be there for a day. It's looking like just over a day. I'll stay one night.
Wow.
The one thing that I did want to add on, kind of on the note of NYC, is we're launching sort of a new Hangout series. And if you're listening, you are the first ones to hear about this publicly. We have not announced it on the website. It's because I love you all so much. But Hodinkee is bringing back a genuinely casual watch Hangout monthly in New York. We're going to do at least, you know, the next several months and see how it goes. As anybody who knows me or has met at meetups, met me in the past, I love meetups. I love hanging out. I love chatting watches. I love not having to have small talk. We can go right to watches or cameras or hats or whatever, bags, whatever you want to talk about. I love it. It's perfect. So I've been pushing our friends at Watches of Switzerland, the owners of Hodinkee, to allow us to essentially just do a super casual hangout. They have this beautiful basement in the Soho store in New York. I believe that's 60 Green Street, or it's on Green Street. It's the only one in Soho for Watches of Switzerland. So now every last Thursday of the month, assuming people actually show up, if nobody comes, then we may not continue, but I don't think that'll be the problem. I'm assuming we will deal with not having enough pizza and beer and drinks and that sort of thing. But 4:30 to 6:30 every last Thursday of the month moving forward is the Hodinkee happy hour. It'll be at Watches of Switzerland Soho. If it works out, it's something I'd love to see move around the country to other great locations that they've got. I'm currently curating some great pizza and a selection of solid beer. We'll obviously have water, and I'm encouraging folks to plan for it. Some great watch conversations. There's no branding. There's no PowerPoints. If you've come to the marathon party, it's food and drinks and people you can stand with and talk about watches. That's the idea. If I address the crowd, it'll be for under a minute, I promise. And yeah, we'll be hosting these monthly. So stay tuned for that. You'll see a notice on Hodinkee's website and on the Instagram soon. But seeing as I'd love to see at least some of you that are in the New York area and are willing to come into Manhattan to hang out for an evening, let's do that. But yeah, the last Thursday of every month, so this one's the 26th, Watches of Switzerland Soho in the basement. You don't have to RSVP. You can just show up. You can show up for a slice and a beer and bounce if you got to keep moving. I get it. But please come out. It'd be great to see you there. And I'm really excited for it.
That sounds great. It's so cool that it's monthly too. I mean, a lot of these events are kind of one-offs and they feel like a bigger deal.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Nice and informal. And yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we were calling it office hours for a while. Like, you know, your prof or your TA says like, hey, you know, this time every week, I just sit in the office with the door open. And I was like, that's a little bit too official. Let's just call it happy hour. I just think it's something that we used to do really well. And then you and I have learned how to do really well within the TGN space. And I just want it to be an open door. You don't have to come in and buy anything. You don't have to see a PowerPoint presentation. there's no brand connection right now. If a brand wants to host, we'd be open to it. But again, they don't get to have a PowerPoint or a discussion or something like that. They can pay for the beer.
good time of year for people starting to get out and about in the city too. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. With that, we did incorporate our wrist check into the beginning of our chat with Lydia. So we can probably jump right into that. Let's just give a brief kind of bio or overview of who Lydia Winters is. She's an accomplished brand strategist, storyteller, and creative leader. By the way, I'm reading this from her website, lydiawinters.com. With over a decade shaping one of the most influential entertainment brands of all time, Minecraft. And James will have a few things to chat with her about with regard to that. She was a chief storyteller, brand officer, brand director, and director of fun. She left there recently and started her own company doing creative storytelling, brand knowledge, and photography. She's built a distinct voice in the watch industry, showcasing timepieces with a fresh design-driven perspective. Her Instagram account is at Lydia's Watches, which we both highly recommend, and has become a recognized platform for watch enthusiasts, combining visual storytelling with cultural and lifestyle context. She also co-hosts This Watch Life, a podcast with her partner that explores an intersection of watches, design, and personal expression. She's been featured in the international press, including a profile about her in the New York Times, and we're just thrilled to have Lydia Winters on TGN. So without further ado, let's jump into it.
All right, a big hearty TGN welcome to Lydia Winters. Lydia, how are you? Thanks for being on the show.
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan. I've listened to many, many episodes.
And we of you, especially of your photography. I feel like there's so many directions this conversation should go. But on the slim chance that some of our audience doesn't have the full background, hasn't maybe listened to your podcast or dug into your history, why don't you give people the quick sort of elevator pitch on what you're up to, and then we can dig into the fascinating, you know, the video game history and the watches and the photography and all that.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I think my history is varied across many different things. So you mentioned video games, which the headline is Minecraft for 13 and a half years, which is what brought me to Sweden, which is where I still live. And I love it here, but I resigned and I started my own agency. And so I'm basically working on storytelling and creative across like a couple of different projects, one of them being watches, which is my first time in the watch world. And the watch community has been such an amazing place. And I got into it just shooting photos of watches, which my partner suggested and I thought was altogether like completely silly. And now it's like a thing I do and have friends around the world from. So that's the quickest, wow. The quickest version of my life story ever.
That's a fantastic intro. And I know that's a weird question to be asked, like try and sum this up, give it a couple sentences. We always do a little intro beforehand, but I like to hear it from right from the guest's own mouth. And yeah, I think my introduction to you is definitely your Instagram, where mm-hmm. you would post these gorgeous photos and then the next frame or the next couple of frames would be like these beautifully annotated sort of descriptions of how you made the image, not necessarily mm-hmm. like this light at this, you know, no. brightness or this one at that one, but like more of the artistic composition, the consideration of mm-hmm. color and texture and the things that I think make a good image, that last thing where you go, well, that's one of Lydia's images.
Like you can almost tell. Thank you. I'm really blushing.
Which is kind of a delight. And then we crossed paths last year at the Nomos booth, where you know, you have a relationship with Nomos. So yeah, why don't we dig into a quick wrist check? What have you got on for the show?
Okay, so you guys have been talking a lot about quartz lately and how you've turned into quartz guys. So I went with my vintage JLC Mecca quartz, or neo vintage,
oh, wow.
actually.
Oh, cool.
It's 1999, 2000. I walked into a store and saw it and just was like, I want that one, which is very infrequent for me. I'm like this, oh, I need to think about, I've had like chances for awesome watches. I'm like, can you hold it for me? I just need to think about it. And with this one, I looked at it. It's very weird because it's a chronograph. It has way too much going on. It has the Delphine hands. It like has a lot, but also it's perfect. And it was on the original bracelet, which really, I have to say, it has this almost, you know, Cartier feeling bracelet. It's super nice. It's that like, yeah, that yeah. 90s style really gets me.
I mean, the late 90s had some real bangers watches in the watch
exactly.
world. And like, don't get me wrong, they're now deep into the neo vintage, mm-hmm. if that's what we're calling
yeah.
it. And I think a lot of them are getting their shine. But yeah, JLC, you know, we've talked a lot about Breitling from that era, but certainly IWC comes up every few episodes.
Yes, for sure.
What a great era for like really nicely sized, but still very sporty, very sort of like intentional watches. I think it was that last window of time when you maybe weren't checking your phone for the time. Most of the time, a watch had to be this functional thing, and whether it was an Iron Man or something like that, that JLC. Yeah, I think it was a great era for watches for sure.
Yeah, I also love it because it was pre-acquisition, so I care a lot about this, like when things were acquired, because I worked on something that was acquired, and it's always different. And so for me, it like sent me over the edge on buying it, that it was like just before JLC. Well,
that gives us a great bridge to Minecraft, but let's get Jason and my wrist check out of the way.
Yeah, let's see what you're wearing.
So yeah, I pulled out my 140-60mm Submariner, so I haven't worn it in a while.
Beautiful.
And I've got a bit of a diving adventure later this week, so I'm, you know, workshopping some options for watches to wear. So I'm pulling out a few out of the box to try out and see if they'll be suitable. But yeah.
So it's diving, but not where you already have a watch attached to it. That's interesting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Which is it's been kind of a rare
freedom.
Rare situation for me. It's kind of nice.
The choice anxiety.
Feel privileged to be able to wear my own watches sometimes. So yeah, that's great. Yeah, and it's sure. such an old favorite of mine, this watch. And you know, I just haven't I don't wear it as much as I used to, but boy, when I put it on yesterday, I was like, yeah, okay, I'll keep this on for a few days. That's great.
This is great.
And another one from that similar era.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. James, you're wearing a Nomos, your Nomos.
I am. Yeah. I'm wearing the Club Sport Neomatic World Timer, the Glacier colorway. I've got it on my hilarious, what do we call the Wellendupe? This knockoff Wellendorf sort of 7-link polished bracelet. Yeah. I don't know. Like I've talked about this watch a ton. I absolutely adore it. I have some travel next week and I'm trying to pick between maybe I take this one, maybe I take something else because this has just been on the wrist for a lot of travel recently. But the shine hasn't worn off for this one for me. I absolutely love it.
It's so beautiful. It's the one I got to wear at the show, even though I was very much preferred the green one, the jungle. But then I wore Glacier and I was like, this is perfect. Also, a side note, I laughed every time you talked on the podcast. You were like, I don't know what this name Glacier is. And I was like, I did not do my job well helping Nomos with these names. If every single time you're like Glacier for some reason. And it was always cracking
me up. So, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into this, but are you somehow behind a lot of the naming of Nomos watches, dials, and
in the recent time? So I've just been working with them for the past year, So with the World Timer, we were thinking about this, like, you know, this variety of landscapes, and we were talking a lot about, like, is it a beach or is it cold? I'm obviously like Sweden, so I'm like, it's Arctic, it's glacier, the red and orange kind of being that, you know, emergency vest that you always have. But James did not, that did not come through for James.
The red didn't translate as the emergency vest, but I mean, I love the colorway. So the
you
name
know what?
Of it,
that's all that matters. That's the thing, is like a great watch is going to be a great watch.
Oh yeah. And I like that all of the names are, I don't have to remember a reference number.
Yes. That's very important to Nomos. And we were like, okay, if it's too hard to say, if no one will ever remember it, you either want it to be so German that no one remembers and it's like really difficult, or we were like,
Zen,
it should
only
be
numbers,
super,
only
super
numbers.
Easy. Yeah.
And Nomos cool names.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Great inspirations, that sort of thing. No, I dig that for sure. And I definitely want to jump into the Nomos thing, but I want to get a little bit of the background because Minecraft was quite a meaningful game for me as well. Back in the day, I know I've told this story, so I won't belabor it, but way back in the day, I want to say it was 0.11 or 0.13.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It was right around when the PayPal got shut down.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Super early.
Yeah. I was listening to This Week in Tech. I was obsessed with Leo Laporte's show at the time. Shout out Leo if you ever hear this. I wouldn't make this show without you know, the guys like him who had done it for so long. But they were talking about this insane game that had gone from, it was pre-beta, or maybe, I guess 0.11 might have been a beta technically. Mm-hmm. And they were, I think it was $12 on PayPal, and I went and bought it, and I was staying in Mississippi. I was on vacation, and it was probably like 7 or 8 in the morning when I bought it. I was listening to the podcast, and then I remember playing it, and then there was a knock on my door and they're like, hey, it's dinner time. And I had played for like 12 full hours of this game. And now my daughters both play it.
Oh my gosh.
And I've watched it go through. And now, like, my eldest daughter, who's 12, she'll try and explain to me the mechanics of the game. And like when I started playing, there was almost nothing. Mm-hmm. It was very rudimentary. And now there's all sorts of interior logic and world building and a huge movie franchise that's tied to it. I wanted to get that out there because, yeah, I feel like I was, and I remember, they froze the PayPal account, and then we saw the number years later with the Microsoft, and that number still remains massive for a game, you know, a garage style game. I'm fascinated to hear how you kind of found your way into that. And did you grow up loving video games? Games always important?
No, I wasn't allowed to play video games, actually. So Minecraft was this weird, fun thing. So I had a totally different life. I was an elementary school teacher. I taught for 1 year, but that's what my background is in. And then I stopped doing that and started doing wedding photography. And I had some friends and they were like, oh, there's this game, because I was like starting to get into making videos and I wanted like a theme. And they were like, there's this game and it's getting kind of it's getting really popular. Again, 2010, so not that popular. And I was like, I've never played video games before. And they were like, why don't you just do it from that perspective? And so I actually had my face on camera, which at the time in 2010 was like, no one was doing that. And I had shaved my head for breast cancer research to raise money. And so I wore like a little hot pink wig that someone had given me, and I named myself Minecraft Chick. Not a name I would pick today, but it is what it is. And then I just started recording, but everyone was doing Let's Plays, these very long videos, just like I play and I, you know, video it and I put it online. And I wanted to do edited, almost like video blog style. So I would play a little and then be like, oh, I can actually swim, even though in the game I don't know how to. And so it became like very quickly, a lot of people started watching it. I remember being like, I think my account was hacked because I got so many new followers, new subscribers on YouTube. And I mean, 2010 YouTube was so different. It was like really early in what it even was. And I just started making these videos and quickly got about 50,000 subscribers. I think my channel still lives somewhere around 80 something, which adjusted for inflation is a lot. But I actually met the Minecraft team by sending a cold email to them. And it was a right place, right time situation. They were going to be in the US. And I said, like, do you need anyone to do anything? Like, here's my channel. And I'm also a serious person. I was a teacher, which I'm not sure if anyone says they're a serious person, if they are. I think probably in my case, that's not true. But I wrote to them and they just happened to need someone. They're like, why don't you host our booth with Sony Ericsson for the Xperia Play, which was this little phone kind of popped out and you played Minecraft on it. And I met the team there and they were like, you like talking to people. We like you. Come back to Sweden with us. And wow. Basically, I started 2 weeks later and moved five months later. And I mean, I brought my bags with me to Stockholm. And like, that was my stamp in my passport the first time. And I like, I live here now. So it was a really wild ride that started a really, really wild ride, which was Minecraft for 13 and a half years.
And what was your role with Minecraft? I'm guessing it evolved over the years, but it doesn't sound like you came from a technology background. It was more of a content creation sort of thing.
Exactly. So they were, it was only Swedish guys working on the team at the time. They had a CEO, but most of the team was developers. And they were like, you like to talk, come back with us. And we didn't want to say community manager because we already had a community of people like James. And so it was like, okay, we're not going to manage the community. It's already there. So then we picked this name, Director of Fun, which did not get me taken seriously, but it was also quite an awesome title. And I worked with the community on videos and then quickly transitioned into kind of everything around the brand, what things we were doing, should do, shouldn't do, working on things with like the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, putting on Minecraft exhibitions. And like there was just a lot of freedom to continue to grow. And then even post-acquisition, I was the chief brand officer, the chief storyteller. So just the one on stage talking about, I mean, I deeply love Minecraft. It changed my life. So it's very easy for me to talk about how great it is, actually.
That's quite a transition. That's quite a success story. I mean, from sort of not cold calling, but effectively cold calling and saying, can I work with you guys? And then lo and behold, you move to Sweden. That's a big leap. That doesn't happen to a lot of people. That's pretty amazing.
No, it was pretty wild. I would say I'm a dreamer by nature, but I would not have dreamed this one. I was just like, maybe I can actually, what I wanted was I wanted to interview them for my channel because they were in the US and I was like, awesome. They're never in the US. Okay, I'll like meet them and interview them. And actually very quickly, I was like, everyone's pulling them in every direction. I'm not going to be that person. So I did not ask for an interview and they ended up like we did my interview outside the LA Convention Center for to work with them. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Gosh. And you must, I mean, you've stayed in Sweden since you left the company. So you obviously fell in love with Sweden and chose to stay there.
In Stockholm. We're a little bit outside of Stockholm. We moved out to the countryside. So we're on a dirt road, Icelandic horse farms, forest. My little nephews and my sister and my brother-in-law are visiting right now from Florida. And it's just like this freedom of we're like run around outside. We're in this amazing place. And also my partner, Vu, is still working on Minecraft. And we had been working on it together for a long time, too.
Oh, fantastic.
Not how we met, but that's like a whole other story. So he came with me to Sweden. So I say, you know, he moved for love, even though he started with work, but I'm staying for love. So it's fine. And also because I love Sweden.
So fast forward a few years, I guess. And is it 2019, 2020 for watches, earlier than that?
Yeah, I mean, I had the perfect two watch collection. If I could go back in time and just be like, Lydia, don't. I mean, first Boo got me a Tag Heuer in about 2000. I think it must have been 2013, 14. And I liked it, but I wore it off and on. And then he was like, I'm going to try this again. And he like took me to our authorized dealer and was like, now you can pick something. So I picked a Cartier Tank in rose gold. And then I was like, okay, this is so amazing. And immediately Vu was like, so what watch are you getting next? And I was like, you have to back off. I just got this watch. I'm so happy with it. This was like a couple of weeks before Christmas. And then we were going up to see the Northern Lights. And I was like, okay, don't start. I'm going to tell you this on Sunday night, but you have to like still sleep. I'd like to go look at a Rolex tomorrow because I can't really take the Cartier up to, you know, negative 26 Celsius. Oh, and yeah. He was like, oh my gosh. And so then I had the most beautiful white dial Datejust that I bought myself as an acquisition present from Microsoft acquiring the company. And I was like, you know what? I decided to stay on and none of us were shareholders, but it was still like, okay, I'm going to jump in and be part of this new era of Minecraft. And so I bought that watch for myself to represent it. And then I took it everywhere. It went like around the world with me. Every event I was at, it was almost always on stage and it was just perfect. And then in 2020, like the typical, like when you only have one watch, I was like, oh my gosh, it's 5 years. I have to send in my Rolex because it needs to be serviced. Like the day we were going to Vietnam and I was like, it can't wait those extra 2 months, like this extra, no, actually 3 weeks. I was like, it can't wait. So I send it in and I was like, I'd like another watch. And so I bought a Tudor Mini Sub. Oh, and nice. Then it just sort of, then we were also going to Tokyo on that trip. It was right before everything shut down for the pandemic. And I was like, I'm going to buy an IWC Pilot chronograph. And so I just like bought one and then it just like went wild. And I think again, it was Vu being like, we should listen to a watch podcast. How about 10 and 2 with Kat and Catlin? And I was like, yeah, you know what? Two cool ladies watch it. And I just took the bait and just like, he worked the long con on this one. And now I always say now I'm much deeper in it and I'm much worse. So it's like he got me in and then I went as deep as possible.
Today, would you say you share similar tastes in watches or is there a divide?
No, there's a pretty big divide, I think. And we don't share watches, which people are like, what? So we each have our own entire collection. But for context, we share everything else. And for many, you know, for almost the entire time I was working on Minecraft, he was too. So we were working together, living together, traveling together. Only now, since I started my own company, do we have less overlap. But we were like, our collections are our own. You know, he's gone very Japanese with like Otsuka Lotec, especially in the past few years. Kurano, which he got me my first one. And then I was very Rolex colorful OPs for a while. And now I'm in my neo vintage with like the JLC. Yeah, we're like bouncing around. There's a lot of different watches that we both have or like at any given point. Tudor is one that has stayed consistent for both of us like the whole time, I would say.
Is that still the Mini Sub or you sort of transitioned into more modern Tudors or?
Yeah, more modern. The Mini Sub was what started me. And then I would wear Vu's Black Bay 58 sometimes. I got the Tudor 925 silver, which nice. It does tarnish. So it's still like a little annoyance to me. But my perfect Tudor is the BB54, which Vu gave me for our anniversary. So it says team on the back, which is something we say to each other. Especially when we're like slightly fighting. So it's like, no, you, and then you have to stop, which is great. And so the BB54, I think, is a perfect watch, but one that
it's a great watch.
When I saw them announce it, I was like, eh. And then I saw it in person and I was like blown away and I love it so much.
And do you sell watches as well, or do you just kind of keep accumulating them? I mean, are you kind of a flipper at all? Sure.
No, I'm a horrible flipper. I'm a horrible, not even flipper, like just selling the watches I don't wear has been, I'm so bad at it. And I have a lot of great watches and I know that they need to find loving homes. So it will happen soon, but I am definitely more of an accumulator and hoarding for sure. Cause I'm like, oh, but now I like it when I see it again. But now when I'm with Nomos, like I go to Berlin and work with the team there every other week. So then I'm wearing a Nomos every other week. So now I wear even less watches. So now it's really time to start like trimming the collection. It needs to happen.
And what's the sort of current love in the Nomos range?
Oh, well,
what do you like to wear when you're in Berlin? What's the Berlin watch?
So I have quite a few Nomos, and we did before we started. The only Nomos I've bought since, I actually bought two Nomos since starting to work, and one was a present for Vu, so it's not mine, and one was a vintage Nomos. So I still haven't gotten like a modern one yet because I keep waiting, and the world timers, I can't decide. But I typically wear either my club. I have a Tetra that Vu gave me for my 30th birthday because obviously Minecraft. So that was one I wore on stage many, many times because I was like, it's just a perfect, like, as soon as he showed it to me, I was like, this is a perfect Minecraft looking watch. So the Tetra is one. And then I bought I found randomly in Sweden a Ludwig, and it ended up being from 1996, which is very cool. I noticed that the dial had the Glashütte SA, and I just like happened to look and the auction was ending in a couple hours and I bought it and it's awesome. So that one is the newest one. Oh, but I actually have many different, I have almost all the model families and have since before. So big Nomos fan here.
Well, lots to choose from on those.
Yeah, exactly.
And did that relationship with Nomos come about the same way the Minecraft one did? You sort of approached them with kind of an interest in working with them, or and tell us about the work you do for them. I'm curious.
Yeah, so Nomos actually was, I started talking to them through watch photography. And so they were, you know, asked if I wanted to see a watch. And I was like, yes, please. And then they invited me to their yearly forum where they ask different influencers if they'd like to come out to Glashütte. The first year, Vu and I couldn't go. And the second year we went. And now we just like won't ever stop going. You're not supposed to go back, but we're just kind of like, we're now allowed to keep going. but it was kind of similar to the Minecraft story. Again, I thought it would be cool someday maybe to do something with Nomos. It started with like, maybe I could take photos of watches with them. But then when I decided to resign, actually, it was right at the time that they were having the second Nomos forum that I attended last year. And the founder, Roland, actually was like, I've been wanting to talk to you to come work at Nomos, and I heard you are free now. I was like, whoa, wow. Hold on. Yeah, so it was actually like super amazing. He had been listening to our podcast and I think reading about my work with Minecraft and the brand and storytelling. And so he knew way more than I ever said on the podcast. So I was very impressed because he was like, no, I want you to come and like work with our international storytelling. And I was like, that is an offer I can't refuse. But I did say, no, I'm starting my own company. And he's like, well, okay, then let's do it through that. So Nomos is my biggest client that I'm working with. And I mean, it's the dream. It's like what I would have wished and pitched later, which is kind of similar with Minecraft. Like I wouldn't have ever pitched, like, take me back to Sweden. Yeah, it's just wonderful. And so I'm working with them. I'm a brand and creative consultant for them. So I'm working on their storytelling, and I'm mainly in Berlin at Berliner Blau, which is their agency side that's working on marketing and communications and the creative direction photography. And so it's just been amazing. I'm in Berlin every other week, pretty much for the whole week, which is very cool. So I have these two lives now.
Yeah. What other, if you can tell us, what other brands are you working with through your company, or are they watch adjacent, or just?
No. So Nomus is my only watch client, and that's by design, because I wanted to go like deep on the brand strategy side. And then my other client, I can't say too much about, but it's around the Minecraft world. So it's not in Minecraft. So we're working on I'll say that, okay, but it's super fun to have the gaming side. And again, it's a client that approached me who I knew and thought was amazing. So I'm like very happy with the work I get to do with, I only want to work on things that I'm passionate about. And so Nomos was super easy. I mean, the first forum, the thing that they knew about me was that I was like really wooing. Like, so, you know, it's a kind of quiet forum, a lot of press, and they're introducing new watches. And I was like, I am a big fan. So I was like, woo, 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 which is like not German at all. And they had never, even on the International Day, they had never sort of seen this. But they decided that they liked that feeling of like, wow, okay, you know, I mean, to me as someone who's on stage and has been like across the world, you need that like excitement from the energy. It's always very hard if you have this cold crowd. So I'm always like your biggest fan. If I'm in the audience, I will like, I will look at you. I will nod my head. Sometimes no. I'm like, I didn't know you spoke German. I do not, but I'm here for you. Like, let's go. You're the best. And so it was just really, yeah, like getting into, to Nomos through that. So
that's great. Yeah. And you had mentioned that the bridge to kind of start the conversation with Nomos was through photography. Which kind of ramped up? Because I was on similar ramps at various parts of my life. Which one ramped up for you more heavily first, the watches or the photography?
It's always been photography for me. So, I mean, when Vu and I are doing, you know, podcasting and you're like, okay, hypothetically speaking, you can only pick one. It's always going to be photography. I love it so much. I have since I was young. My mom always had a camera. I was always shooting. I've done it professionally and at different phases in my life, in and out. I think what made me excited about watches and photography is that it was a way to take an object and kind of show some personality around it. And also because I just love that you have this thing that, you know, I really like doing portraits of people, but people are moving and running around, especially with their kids. And so I was like, wait, a watch, I can just like sit for quite a while and just pose this thing and like make it look as good as possible. And so for me, it's always photography, but then like my love of watches became so much deeper by photographing them. And then I started to be like, that watch doesn't photograph well, so I don't really want it in my collection, which then means, you know, you're way too deep. Well, I've been both. There
for sure. I get that. And yeah, I think for me, it was a big piece of how I got deeper into watches, was like taking this hobby and applying it to a new hobby. And yeah, I remember thinking along very similar lines that this is so much more peaceful than trying to photograph a person.
Yes.
When I first got into watches, when I first got into like quote unquote professional photography, I was going to like, you know, dentist's office and they wanted to rebuild their website, and I would have to get the five staff members, you know, photos for their masthead or whatever. And of course, nobody liked the photos, even if they were good. And then, you know, oh, take some pictures of the equipment. So we have those too. And you're like, I don't know anything about dentist equipment. And then all of a sudden it was something kind of small. I could do it in my room. You could be in like, it's a control freaks paradise. Because, and I mean, I don't relinquish this much in my own photography, but you can take this to your level, to Vincent Lyons, where the watch is suspended on little tiny bits of string and there's water being splashed behind it. Like whatever level of creativity you want is available to you. And goodness, I mean, since definitely, you know, following 2021, you know, pandemic kind of boost, but even I would say, you know, 2016, 2017, with like the solidification of Instagram, it also became a very social thing to put on the internet somehow, despite it being a watch, which is something I've always kind of appreciated.
I think that's what made me fall in love with watches more, is the social aspect. And then, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Vu, my partner, said, oh, you should take photos of watches. Because I was like, okay, I'm going to be on. It was actually Kat and Catlin invited me to be on the podcast. And I was like, I have a regular Instagram account, but like, I have to show that like, I like watches. I have watches. I remember sending them a photo, like, I have watches. They're like, we already invited you on. Like, what are you trying to prove? And so I just started my account thinking like, okay, I will shoot a few photos and then it will be fine. But it just became so fun and quickly, you know, friends around the world where I'm like, okay, I can go almost anywhere and meet someone that I know online, which reminds me so much of the early Minecraft days when the community was smaller and you could really, like, you could get in touch with anyone. And to me, I love sort of reliving that in the watch world, but it's like with, you have this common hobby, but then you find all of these other things that you have in common. I mean, the two of you are a perfect example of that. And so watches, like, I stayed for that. And it also really expanded my photography and helped me find like a more defined style. For so many years, I was like, I don't have a style. And then now I'm like, okay, if someone knows it's my photo, then I have a style. So it's like, I really, watch photography helped me develop that because I could quickly know what I wanted to post and didn't post. And then that is how you figure out what your style is.
Absolutely.
That's a really good point. I think I am definitely not a product photographer or watch photographer by any means, but I love checking out other people's stuff, yours and James's and Mark and Hodinkee and Vincent Lyons. James, I totally forgot about him, but what a great example.
I mean, Vincent's one of my top fives for sure.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about developing your style, it's, you know, photography styles are a little easier to discern in the wider world, like whether it's wildlife or, you know, street photography or whatever. But with watches, like it's a thing to like have your own style, and you definitely do have a very distinctive style. And because you're photographing an object that if you give it to five people, like chances are all five photos could look very similar. How do you go about kind of creating your own style? What does that involve? Props or lighting or just how do you go about that?
Yeah, I think for me it was, I find watches very joyful, and just in life as a person, I try to bring a lot of joy and enthusiasm into what I'm doing. And so I think the first few photos that I posted, they felt a little more similar to the style that was very prevalent at the time. And it's like maybe a little moodier. And then I was like, okay, actually, I'm going to take a bunch of flowers and make a set piece of flowers. And I'm going to put flowers in my pocket. And so it became very like nature-based, I would say, and very colorful, sometimes a little bit silly, like, you know, cutting out and gluing all the dots onto my turquoise Rolex OP to make it look like the new celebration, which then I had to tell people, like, it isn't. It, like, look closely, like, I just glued these on. Because I was like, watches are fun. And so I just didn't want to take it so seriously. So I think that really helped me. And so, some of the photos are maybe a little more serious, but I like to create a bit more of this illusion. Like, I'm not putting something underwater. I'm holding up a glass of water and reflecting it in the light and like making, you know, it's more of, in some ways, this photography is more about me than the viewer, which I think is how you develop a style. It's like, what do I like shooting? What's fun? And what I realized and why I don't put out just like tons of photos or like, here's a more similar thing, is because I only want to do things that like make me feel creative, because that's what the outlet is for. Which is why, like, James, I love your zoo photos. I'm like, okay, he's going to the zoo with the kid, with the family. And he's like, I'm going to be creative today. And like, that's what it is.
Yeah, the zoos become like an escape. Because you get a split second, and
it's great.
I'm probably at a point where like I don't ever need more camera gear to shoot watches. I could probably do it with less.
Yeah.
But this gave me like a dumb outlet to be like, you know, resetting camera gear to now have this big long lens, and I look
exactly,
I'm that dad at the zoo. With
it's perfect. I also like that you say like I'm set on camera gear, but yeah, I like recently see this like I just got the Ricoh. So like this is all of us camera nerds. Yeah. It's like you immediately are like, but also
for sure
I could have another camera, which is me too. I just bought more equipment. I'm like, I absolutely do not need this. But the other thing, Jason, was what James said earlier, is I wanted to show the behind the scenes. And this is something that, like, I did in my Minecraft videos, and just like, I think the more you can share how to do something. And so for me, I wanted to show the behind the scenes for two reasons. To show a little bit about myself, because what I missed in the watch world, for good reason, many people don't want to show themselves. But like, I missed that as an outlet of like, I want to know something about you. Like, these props are actually things I have. Like, I'm doing this. And I think now, you know, years into like the watch photography space, I think people share a lot more of themselves than at the beginning, where it was like, okay, here's the generic prop set. And so for me, I was like, I want to just share. And if someone can take something also that I'm, you know, using great cameras, but the rest of the equipment is very minimal. I'm setting up like typically like a box I found, because mainly because I'm very lazy. I don't like to deal with the lights. I'm using natural light. And so to me, it was, you know, sharing those things so someone else might go, oh, actually with my camera, I can just, you know, I can set up this little set of things, or I can find this location and take an image. And it's always very amazing when people reach out and say, oh yeah, I did this, or like, I did this in the Lydia style. It's always incredibly flattering and humbling.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm definitely a fan. Some really lovely work. The one that I always remember is the yellow flowers on the yellow OP, because it just looked like it should have been a movie poster, or like it had that feeling. You know, I'm curious. Jason put a great question here, which I don't know why we don't ask this more commonly. What do you dislike in watches? And that could be like in the realm of brand storytelling, where you're like, this brand is getting it wrong. You don't have to be specific to brands if you don't want to, but what is it that you're not a fan of at a personal level, or maybe at a more broad scope for like a brand?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, obviously, whenever you're into something luxury, there's this big barrier to entry. And so for me, I am like, do you like watches? Okay, then you can be in the club with me. And so that's like commenting on kind of broadly on anyone's watch, to be like, oh, I like your watch. And then they're like, oh no, it's only a Casio, this. And I'm always like, no, tell me more about it. And I mean, I've had people like hand me their like, just the amount of times someone will take off their watch and just hand it to me. I have a friendly face, so they're not worried I'm going to run, I don't think. But it's just, to me, it's any type of watch that someone wants to wear, I think is awesome. And so I know there are like these jokes in the watch world of like, oh, this brand or that brand. Yeah. To me, and you know, that's any hobby.
Yep.
But to me, I'm also always like, but you can wear that watch. Like, you can have the Hublot if that's what you want, if it makes you super happy. Or I had a friend like, oh, that's what my husband picked. Is that like a bad watch? And I was like, no, of course not. It's the watch he picked. And it's the one he wanted when you two got married. Like, why? Like, what could be bad about that? So I think the watch world could use more just openness in that regard. And then that also directly translates to like the brand storytelling. I think it's gotten better in the years that I've been in. Obviously, for me, like 13 and a half years ago, now for what was, you know, 2010 in video games as a woman, like, whew, terrible. Like, I've never
I mean, you still see some pieces of that left too.
And there's that's the thing, there still is so much of it, and in watches, you know, maybe it's a little further ahead of where it was in video games all the way back there, but it's definitely not at the most inclusive state that it could be in. And I think the more, that's why I love you guys talking about quartz the way you do. It's just like, why can't people just like watches, and they can like whatever they like, and they can have something within their budget? And like, how cool if I get to know so much more about them, because when I ask about a watch, people tell me like way more personal things than I would ever hear if I just like had the longest lunch conversation. So to me, just like openness overall.
Yeah.
And like, not so much of a feeling of like, what is a collector? You know, oh, you just like watches, or you are a collector. Mm-hmm. I'm like, do you have a couple watches? Perfect. You're a collector. Like, let's not.
You know, Jason and I joke about this occasionally. Also, like, some of the watches that people would, especially if you're brand new to the hobby or still kind of learning everything, the watches you might be pining for are some of the least interesting to talk about at a meet. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the Submariner. Jason's wearing a Submariner, but like, I've seen him. Yeah. Is it a special one or is it just a Submariner? And there's nothing wrong with Submariners. I'm picking on an icon, which is a ridiculous thing to do. Let's not be unfair. A Speedmaster. I have a Datejust that I really like. These aren't like they're so ubiquitous to being a great watch. When I see a weird Timex or a great Seiko I haven't seen before, JDM Seiko, something like that, cool old Citizen. Show me an Aqualand of any type. I'm in. You know what I mean? I'm pretty deep. I definitely feel that. And I think it feels, at least from my perspective, that could be a recursive loop, internal bias. But it feels like it's become more of a space where like there's a broader window of what is perceived as like entry to the quote unquote club. It's not just the 9/11 show where you have to have one of five references and then that's good. And those are great watches, great cars, all that kind of thing. But yeah, I agree that it's nice, especially, you go to like a wind up or some of the TGN meetups, that sort of thing. These are the things that we do. You go visit one of the Toronto, like the Canadian shows now, and the breadth of watches you see is ridiculous. I mean, within 20 minutes, I saw a Spinnaker, and the next guy had a Roger Smith.
That's awesome.
Early Roger Smith. So I mean, like these are the two. I mean, if you have to be fairly deep in watches to know either of those two, but two different ends of the scope, both bought by people who love watches, which is really the signifier for me. If you bought it because you love it, that's going to be good.
Exactly. Enough.
The more we love watches, the more we should want more people involved in watches, and therefore to be that's kind of open and inclusive. I mean, it's counterproductive to be elitist and exclusionary. And I would argue that, well, James's watch today is a close second, but I would say your Mecha Quartz is the most interesting watch call here. I mean, it's that kind of thing. That my Submariner, like you said, James, I mean, we've seen them. But tell me the story of that Mecha Quartz. I mean, it's a cool piece, that's what it's all about. What drew you to that one then? What, you just saw it? Are you drawn to watches for a visual?
Okay. So what drew me to this watch actually is, first of all, I can always like see the size now because of like looking at so many watches, like even my IWC that I bought in 2020 I was like, it's slightly smaller than the rest. Because it's 39, which is still, kind of big for me. But I was like, okay, it's smaller than the rest. And for this one, I just saw it and I really loved the bracelet, the look of it. I think it's very weird. It has a white date window, but with a black dial, not something I would normally go for because it stands out. But also the date is in red. Like this watch doesn't make sense. And that's kind of what I love about it. And I think that's what drew me to it. It's like no part of it is what I would think I would pick or put together on a watch. And somehow I was like, oh, this is so cool. Yeah. And the open case back is very cool because then you actually see both the mechanical and quartz parts. So it's awesome. Man.
We're going to need some photos.
Okay.
I will need some photos of this because I'm trying to picture this.
I know. And this is the funny thing because I haven't actually photographed it because I'm always like, oh, I need to.
Yeah.
But yes. Okay. Now I will. This is my homework.
Yes, please. That's great.
And then will I see you at Watches Wonders this year?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm curious. You probably know what's coming from Nomos, and I don't think I've signed that NDA, so I don't know. But I'm kind of loosely. It's the predictions thing is weird. But what would you love to see from more brands?
Ooh,
is it more? Is it easy? Is it something more color? Obviously, you have a fondness for not brighter or punchy colors, just color use in general. But then you've got a black dial JLC on.
Yeah, exactly. Which I really don't have that many black dial watches. But I mean, for me, it's always like a little bit smaller sizes, but keeping like the design proportions of the original. So, I mean, yeah, I love the Submariner. I would love to have a Tudor mini sub. It's not going to happen because as a brand, like it doesn't make any sense. But I'll always wish for it. So it's like, I'm always like, is it a prediction or is it just like me free wishing?
And then it's hopes and dreams.
Yeah. And then it's just, I would buy this watch immediately. You have one sale. And so I think for me, like, yeah, I would love a Tudor mini sub.
Like
I would love a modern, which, I know that The BB54 is in the range. Yeah. It's in the range, but I mean, a 33 versus a 37, those are not the same. So I'm always like, it's different. And I love the BB54, so I wouldn't actually replace it. I would just add another one into my collection that I'm not diving with.
The Black Bay
Yeah,
Mini.
Exactly.
The BBM.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great idea. Yeah, if they do a blue 54, like if they follow the, yeah. what they did with the 58s, mm-hmm. And go from the black gilt to the blue, I think between my wife and I, we probably have to get one. Yeah.
Yeah, it will be perfect. I'm excited to see, honestly, I like seeing what all the brands are doing. I think the coolest thing at Watches and Wonders, especially as a brand nerd, is just getting to see Watches and Wonders, I would say, is the most pure brand expression. So any booth that I go to, I should be able to see like, okay, here's what this brand stands for, because it's really this like moment in time that all of them not only talk about their novelties, but also about, you know, maybe Vacheron is like, okay, history. And so you really see that in the booth and in everything. Or, you know, JLC last year with the Reverso year, like, okay, this is very deep. Or,
oh, that gold Reverso on the bracelet.
Yeah, exactly. Nuts. Gorgeous. And that's not something I, again, would predict. So I guess my biggest hope is that like some brands surprise us. Because to me, I think that's the most fun year. So I thought it was really fun with the Land Dweller. It was fun when Rolex did the puzzle dial, the celebration, which then after making one, I do have the real one. And it's just, though, to me, it's those things that you're kind of like, this doesn't exactly make sense. So I'd love to see more of that around Watches and Wonders. And it's an interesting time because obviously with the industry down, do some brands like play it safe, or do they really go like swing for the fences and say, okay, this is the time to be bold yep. and interesting and try stuff. So that's what I'm kind of looking for this year.
And I'm curious with the role that you now have in the watch industry with your company and obviously you're servicing with Nomos, is this I never once thought about it this way, but like in your world, is this an interesting place to walk around and like take notes and see how brands are showing themselves in their booths, in their displays, what's good, what doesn't work? Is this like a great chance to kind of like get inside the playbook of other brands?
It is. And I wish I thought of that more, but mostly I'm just like a watch nerd, like living my best life. I am watching for it. Not as much on the critique side, because I think obviously with any brands, there's, you know, like they're trying to tell their story. So more of like a curiosity towards like what the brands are telling. So that's what I enjoy with Watches and Wonders. And then the watches themselves. So those two things, getting to walk around but I would like to not be labeled like a brand spy. I'm not like spying because I also have this other side of like our podcast and being in the watch world and a little bit influencing. And so for me, any work I do with Nomos is making sure they're not like everyone else. So anything I'm looking at is to not do that and not advise that, because you need to have your own clear brand aesthetic and story. That's the best way for people to really understand what you're doing. When you combine that with a watch, that's the perfect moment.
Well, look, I think that's loosely the our block of time here. I've got, you know, 50 more questions, so we should have you on again, maybe after the show, and see what you thought of everything that came out. Looking forward to see what comes up with Nomos this year. Last year, it was a delight for me, and one of the only sort of super noteworthy new watches I've bought in a little while. It was a delight to have you on.
Thank you guys so much.
Where should people kind of follow along? Let's get into the podcast quickly.
Okay, yeah, I'm on, my Instagram is at Lydia's Watches. My partner Vu and I have an, I would say, on and off again podcast called This Watch Life. I mean, we did do daily episodes for like 200 episodes. So, I mean, I feel like now that they're kind of more scattered, it's okay.
Daily? Yeah, daily?
We did them Monday through.
Oh, James, she's putting us
to shame. No, you guys, okay, 10 years of like, you guys are like the consistent ones. And we're like,
I wouldn't have made it 6 months of daily.
No,
we started out bi-weekly.
But I mean, we do have, we live together, so it's a lot easier. And we would just get up in the morning and have coffee and do like 15 to 20 minutes was the typical episode Monday through Friday. And it was really just an experiment and a lot of fun. And now we've switched to more bi-weekly-ish, more like 30 to 45 minutes. When I'm traveling so much, it's a little harder to find the time, but I think, yeah, we're getting back into the swing of it. And Watches and Wonders time is like, I mean, the gift that keeps on giving for podcasting. You only have content. So I think now is the time to kick it back into gear.
Absolutely. Well, everybody should give it a follow and check out those episodes and certainly the Instagram. Lydia, an absolute treat to have you on. Thanks so much for giving us an hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We'll see you in Geneva in just a little over a month's time.
No. Don't do the countdown.
got about 80 stories to write before then.
I was going to say, you're probably as stressed as I am. I'm like, whew.
Well, thanks again and all the best. And we'll chat soon. All right, and as we said there to close out that great chat with Lydia, huge thank you for her coming on the show. I thought it was a really good time. So a big thank you to Lydia, and looking forward to seeing what she's got cooking up with Nomos in the future. With that, I think it's time to probably put a bow on the show. You want to get into some final notes?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, you can go first. I think you've got kind of an interesting one here.
I spoke about it on the previous episode that I had kind of redone my office. I moved it from downstairs up to a bedroom in the upstairs. And the goal here, among other things, was get all of my stuff into a different room, which we succeeded in, but also was to aid in some better organization. I have a lot of just things that are around that, like, I don't necessarily want to get rid of, but I also like they can't just sit on any horizontal space in the room. And the solution for this is, as you might well be guessing, is to go to IKEA and get some drawers of some sort. And so I went to IKEA and we walked around. We really didn't find the thing that I wanted. We looked at a few different options. Some were available, some weren't. Really wanted to find some proper organization for the 3D printer that was out of stock or wasn't in my color, that sort of thing. And then as we were going to check out, I found these IKEA Helmer metal drawers. I got them in blue. I bought two of them. They're on for $40 each. And I've actually had really good long-term success with metal products,
yeah,
like metal sort of industrial products from IKEA. I have since before Vancouver. I got them when I was in Hamilton secondhand 16, 17 years ago. I got two red lockers, which I still have, just very simple, straightforward sort of lockers. That's what the 3D printer is currently living on. I have this sort of weird architectural, structural orange series of tubes that holds tripods and stuff like that. I'm not actually sure what it was for originally. And then I, when I redid the office first, when we first moved to this location, I bought a bunch of these kind of gray industrial shelving units, which used to be in the background of my Zoom calls. And those have been really good. So I'm batting 1,000 on metal products from IKEA and their usefulness. And these are on their website. These Helmer drawers are on their website for $80 currently. Like I said, I paid $39 Canadian, which is like $30 bucks, $28 US. So I bought two of them and they are about maybe 2.5 feet tall, probably not quite a foot wide, and have six fairly large metal drawers. So it's all flat pack. So you're basically just bending stuff. And then kind of once it's into the shape, there's little tabs that you bend down with like a screwdriver or whatever. Pretty easy to put together once you get through the first couple. And I don't think I needed more than the two I have, but I've got them all divided up. There's little pieces of paper that you can label each drawer. I'm really happy with them for the $40 for sure. For 80, maybe buy one and decide if it suits your life. And then if you need another, buy another. And it's just really good. I can share a photo into Slack or something like that if people want to see kind of how I've got them. But I think you'll get the idea from the link in the show notes. But really useful. And I think like I've got one that's just for NATOs now. So I don't have to put my NATOs into a different thing and then hide that thing somewhere. I've just got a drawer. I've got a drawer for like bracelets and bracelet bits. I've got one for stickers and patches. It's almost full. I've got one for like travel adapters and
oh,
other
sure.
things
oh,
I use
man.
Just for travel, right? A neck pillow that I wear once a year coming up soon when I, do a couple economy trips to and from Geneva and I know I'm not going to sleep that well. So it's handy and useful. And I think they look okay. And I can imagine them being in the right zone for the sorts of offices I imagine many of the people listening to this have at their home.
Yeah. I think your use case is, as you were saying, what you have in each drawer, it's like, yep. I probably have something at home I could adapt for this use, but these look like a great size. And there are certain products that IKEA is great. I mean, I have so much IKEA stuff and admittedly, some of it doesn't have the greatest reputation. Some of the
yep.
the flat pack stuff that, you know, isn't terribly built for longevity or whatever, but like the metal stuff and some of the older things, the wood products that they that yep. they've made, I've had really good luck with. And yeah, I really need to migrate my NATOs to a drawer. I think that's the moral of the story
nice.
Here. And
yeah, it's nice.
I'm so tired of like emptying out a giant Ziploc of 20 millimeters and sorting through this.
I was using like
nest.
A DeWalt case that you're oh, supposed yeah, to put that. Hardware in. And it was yeah. it was effective, but all of the bins were NATOs.
Yeah, yeah.
So right. like, so now I've got it yeah. separated. But yeah, I would agree. Like for me, IKEA really comes down to the flat pack, the MDF stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It you can build it once. A lot of yeah, it doesn't yeah. seem designed to be then taken apart and moved somewhere and built again, you know,
right.
especially those ones that they use the little wooden peg. And I'm sure there's an official name for this. I should know it. I don't. The little wooden peg. And then on the receiving side, the little metal circular cylindrical. Keeper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those don't yeah. ever seem to go tight, really tight twice.
Mm-hmm.
But I everything, the metal stuff, the lighting, I think is excellent for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. I love having a lot of little lights in my office and a handful. One of them is like 70s IKEA. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. But I like having that kind of stuff. They do a good job if you want something like a paper lantern, like a Noguchi style lamp, but you don't mm-hmm. want to spend Noguchi money. They've got that kind of locked in. I'm a fan of it. I've got their lighting and the metal stuff kind of all over the house whenever it's useful.
Yeah. Yeah. Good pick. Yeah. And good price too. Wow.
Yeah. Fun stuff for sure. But what have you got for this week?
Yeah, I've got a Substack recommendation. I think, you know, this guy, Sebastian Younger, you know, doesn't need much introduction to most people. Mm-hmm. Just one of my favorite authors, writers, going way back. You know, he used to do some writing for Outside Magazine and Men's Journal and, you know, war reporter, author, obviously The Perfect Storm mm-hmm. is his famous one. Filmmaker.
In My Time of Dying.
I would say he's one of the five writers that I would claim as an influencer for me on my own work and just kind of what I would aspire to be. And he's just so good. And he's launched a Substack. So this wasn't that long ago. I think it was within the past couple of months. And I immediately paid up and subscribed to it because he's just such a thoughtful, excellent writer. And these come out, you know, roughly weekly. And then he does some chats, you know, so if you want some more direct interaction with this incredible writer, you can interact with him on Substack chat. And his Substack, kind of the one where he posts his stories, is called Tribe. And it's just, it kind of goes all over the place. Like I'm looking at one called The Future of Warfare, and there was one called What It Feels Like to Be Blown Up or Survive an Explosion or something along those lines, where he recounts, you know, riding in a Humvee when he was embedded in the Korangal Valley in Afghanistan, and they hit an IED and it blew up their Humvee. And you know, he talks about what it was like to almost die when he had this horrible aneurysm that almost killed him. And, you know, just all of these really thoughtful things. And then lately he's been doing these regular excerpts of novels. He made a point of sitting down and reading a number of kind of well-known canonical works of fiction, and then he'll extract like a passage of it and then analyze it and say like, this is really good writing and here's why. And I just find that so great for a great writer like him to kind of explain what he likes about someone else's writing. It's really good. I really recommend it. Like I said, Younger is one of my favorites, and this doesn't disappoint. It's a good way to get him on a weekly basis. And frankly, I'm surprised it took him this long to get there. You know, I think a lot of these well-known journalists and writers and things are migrating to these kind of subscription-based platforms. Yeah. And it makes sense for somebody like him. I mean, he's just got such a following, and it's a neat way to get his stuff in a more intimate way.
For sure. I mean, you've got Sebastian, you've got David Concannon, like a lot of our faves are making it onto the platform. I think it's an exciting time where, I mean, we've built a small business on this, but the idea of just being able to go direct to the source of what it is that you like. And like, I'm not saying that a book deal and buying a book, I love books, I read books all the time, that sort of thing, but it's cool to have an even shorter route to an idea, a thought, maybe something that would never become a book. And you know, with your and my love of Yeah, the Sebastian Youngers, Mark Twites, the like this sort of thing, and to have these guys kind of back in this cycle of a space where you're already kind of living. I'm reading yours, I'm reading David's, and then now you can add to that list. It's a delight.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, cool stuff. Great recommendation. So you got some metal drawers and a great Substack and an absolutely incredible chat with Lydia Winter. So a pretty solid episode, a huge result for the TGN CWN1 prototype auction. And what an episode. That was a fun one.
That was really fun. And after we click off here, I'm going to go pack up that prototype watch and the care package for Josher and head off to FedEx. So exciting Tuesday here. And as always, Amazing. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout a siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Charles Darwin, who said, "A man who dares to waste 1 hour of time has not discovered the value of life."